Accession number 38651, Mr. Bill Ralston, Real 10. Now, tell me about Christmas Day. I mean, in hospital, what was it like? I mean, is it, was it depressing, or did they put on a show for you?
Yeah, it was quite good. We had a Christmas lunch, but I can remember the Japanese people, they wanted extra pay for working Christmas Day over the Christmas period, and they all went on strike. So British Army, being what they were, or Commonwealth Army, weren't going to be denied this. They brought in sailors to man the boiler house and had people to do all the various jobs. They even had patients who were pushing the trolleys down to the operating theatre, like, you know, some poor devil would be on the trolley going to go and have operation, or something stitched up, or what bits of metal took out of them, and they were, had jobs at doing that. The food was okay. They brought in the ACC to do the cooking, and it all passed away sort of quite happily.
So what next? You've been in there, what, about 2 months?
2 or 3 months, yeah.
2 or 3. You're not sure, September, no, October, yeah. So what happened next then?
When they had a fitness test, first of all, I went to a place out at sea for 2 weeks. I've got the photos of that.
So what's this place?
This was more or less like a convalescent depot. It was a little island, and everybody thought it was going to be a booze up for everything, but all this was very light sporting activities. I can remember there was tennis courts, and guys couldn't play tennis, they would just hit the ball over. Couple of Japanese women who were, must have been tennis coaches, they were there. It was quite nice, and you could walk up, and there was loads of shrines, and the rumour was that this was to do with kamikaze pilots. This is what we were told.
And well, the camp used to be.
Yes, like, you know what this was. It was like a glorified holiday camp, I suppose you would call it, like, except there was no nighttime entertainment or anything like that. It was just geared up for light sports. I even think there was a swimming pool there. I can't remember too much. Some of them went swimming, I'm sure. Anyhow, went back to the hospital, had another check-up, and they said, you're going to Con Depot. This was some convalescent thing, and I think there was either 6 or 8 stages you had to go before you could get out. And they used to, it was stage one, it was just more or less walking, that sort of thing. Very light physical exercises. No one pushing you, you done what you could. And I was quite enjoying it. But what they used to do, the PTIs who were there, they used to wear the red and black PT vests, jumpers. They used to see they used to call them honey carts. There was an oxen with a two-wheel cart, and it used to go around the people's homes, and all the waste from the toilet used to be put into wooden barrels, and it'd all be slopping around, and so they'd get you up to behind one of these, and then it'd be just quick march, like. They'd get you up by stages and march you along, and everybody be asking, like, you know, let's have a double, let's double wipe this, because the smell was terrible on it, and they would keep you there, like, so you, when they'd say go, like, you'd really go to get out of it, and then they knew they was, could push you a bit more. But, and then they used to, I soon got into out of stage one, stage two, stage three, and I thought I was doing quite well.
So how are you going? I mean, is your hip healed?
Yeah.
Sorry, pelvis.
Yeah. Everything was going quite well. Like, I had a bit of pain. It was...
you haven't mentioned pain, which, I mean, did it hurt?
Yes, yeah, but...
When it
first done, and when the plaster was first taken off, it was quite painful then. When it was first done, the Yanks would keep pumping morphine into me, like when I was with them. And that was another thing while I was with the Americans. They came around and gave me a Purple Heart, the medal for getting wounded. Not the drug one, there was one with a drug. This guy had them in a fire bucket and was throwing them in on everyone's bed. But when they threw one on mine, I couldn't move. So it just laid there, and that was it.
Did you ever actually get it?
No. Anyhow, I was progressing quite well, and then I was very competitive, I have been all my life. And I wouldn't hang about, if I could get up there, I would have got up there, up the hill. And we were getting up, and I was always one of the first up the hill. But I couldn't get down. This hill, to run, to train up, after the runs and that. And I couldn't get down. And now they thought that...
Why not? Was it the jarring coming down?
Well, I'll explain it to you now. And I just couldn't get down, and they thought, these PTIs, that I was swinging the lead. So that they must have reported it to the doctors, and the doctors came out and watched, and then they realised what was happening. When I was running up the hill, I was leaning forward. When you're running down the hill, you're leaning backwards. And the doctor came running up to me and he said, "Stop." He said, "Don't run down the hill." He said, "I'm quite happy for you to run up." He said, "But I don't want you to run down." And that this is what they done, and it was gradually getting, I suppose I was getting stronger. Anyhow, they stopped me from running down, and that was it. And the next thing I know, you're going back to unit. Oh, that's brilliant, And I went back. I would think that would be March, April, something like that. And when I got back, they gave me...
53?
Yeah. They gave me a job in the B echelon, I think they called it, an headquarters. And I didn't
like this. So this is back to 61st?
Yeah. I didn't like this, and because there was officers going all around, and a place like that, you would be expected to salute them, and it was more proper British Army ways, where in the line it wasn't.
So what were you actually doing in B echelon?
Everything and nothing, whatever. They said to me, "We want you to drive," and I said, "I don't want to drive."
Why not?
I didn't have confidence, and I had a fear of deep down that this was going to happen to me again, if I drove. And anyhow, they said, "Well, okay, if that's what you want, we're not going to force you." And in the finish, after about 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that, I said, "I can't stand this no longer. Can I have a driving test and see if I've got confidence?" So they said, "Yeah." Had it in a Jeep. And they said, "Yeah, okay." So I said, "Well, let me go back to my unit." And they sent me back to 15 locating battery again, and I was only there 3 weeks.
So you went back to the locating?
Yeah. I would have thought I was there for 3 weeks, something like that, 3-4 weeks. And the next thing I know, I was back in a hospital again.
Now, had you just taken up your old duties?
Yes, yeah.
Now, what happened? What went wrong?
I think it was the running down the hills, or and that, because I just passed out, and they didn't know what was the matter with me, so they banged me in a jeep, got me out, and I was back in hospital again.
Where at?
At Americans again.
With the advanced dressing?
Yeah.
And what did they say was happening, you know?
They just said to me, like, it's your back is causing the trouble. It's to do with nerves or something. So they x-rayed me as best they could. In it was very primitive, like the x-ray, what they had, I should imagine. And they then handed me over to the British, who flew me out in the Dakota again. And now I knew quite well what was happening in that Dakota. I was hooked up to the ceiling, and I was terrified of being in the aircraft. It was noisy. It was sort of windy in there. It was everything you could imagine. And a lot of the guys, right, they were quite happy that they had small wounds, and it was just to get them out of the line sort of thing. They didn't want to leave their mates and that, but I think they were a bit frightened. Like, you know, it's not the best of places. You put on a big, brave show to all your mates, but you're not brave deep down. Like, you know, you are worried about it. Anyhow, I went back to...
So where were you going? Where did you fly back to? Back to...
Japan.
Tokyo.
Yeah. No, to somewhere near Kyrie. It wasn't too far. I can't remember having a long train journey. Like, went back in the hospital, and I said, there's only one place you'll have to. We're going to talk about sending you home. I was there a couple of weeks, whatever. So they said you'll be flown home.
So this is about March, May, April.
April, something like that. So I said, well, all my mates who I joined up with, they're all going home in sort of May. I said, would it be possible that I'll go home with them? They said, yeah, like, if you don't want to fly. I said, well, no, I didn't have a fear of flying, but I wanted to see all these guys who I'd gone out with. We were all the same demob number, like, you know, most of us. And the next thing I know, I was... at JRBD, Japan Reinforcement Base Depot, and I was kept there.
That's the Kure camp.
Yeah. Then that.
So what were you doing there?
Not much. Just had a roll call, and I'd inspect you. I didn't do no guards or nothing there. And just more or less waiting for the Dilwara to berth, and then we embarked on the Dilwara.
So where did the unit go? Was it the whole unit or just a draft?
No, just a draft. Like, it was a massive big draft. We left from Kure, and we went to Pusan and picked up all the people from there on the dockside.
And what was it like meeting them all again?
Oh, absolutely fantastic. Like, you know, everybody's grabbing hold of you and shaking hands. Oh, never thought we were going to see you anymore. What are you doing here? What? And they couldn't make out that I turned down the opportunity to fly home and chose to come home with them. It was okay. Like, you know, we didn't just done a little bit of keep fit exercises, a bit of marching drill up and down the deck. There was a lot of Black Watch and Fusiliers, Royal Fusiliers, on the ship, and there was always competition with them, like, pillar fights and things like that. And they were, one night it was terrible.
Well, tell us what happened.
I think it was the Black Watch, they were on the lower deck. There was a hatchway right through, so possibly about four or five decks, and you could look over the chains and see this big square sort of thing at the bottom. And there was a pillar fight going on there with the Black Watch and other sort of odds and sods of no particular regiment sort of thing. And the Black Watch, we're the champions, right? You know, the roar went out. And then the next thing that you know, they're up on the next deck and they're fighting hell out of the Royal Fusiliers. Oh.
Pillar fights.
Like, you know, but the pillars are getting torn, they're getting broken, and there's stuffing in the pillars. And I thought to myself, I don't know, someone's going to get paid for all these pillars, like, damages. So I grabbed my pillar off my standee. I thought, I'm keeping that. And if it's getting a bit close, I'm going in the ablutions, right, and lock the door. My back won't stand all this, I thought. So when they were, Black Watch and Fusiliers were, they were going at hell for leather against one another. And someone said, up on the next deck. So I thought, that's it, I'm going. So I locked myself in the toilet and put my foot up against the door. And next thing I know, there is an addressment. The public address system, right, on the ship. Go back to your decks and your standees, or we'll stop the ship. And they didn't take no notice, so they said, the ship will now turn round and go back to port said. You're not going home if you don't go back. So they all ran back very, very quickly, right, and I'd come out of the toilet then, and all everyone's hanging over the side, and they sent some naval personnel down there to quell it all. Well, they were petty officers, and one of them was a very small but very, very big, well, more or less fat, you could say, sort of thing. He was barking orders out to him, and someone said to him, go to sleep, Popeye. Well, that done it, right, and he's running from one side, and then there's someone from the other side, and they finish this. Petty officers, they come up and they cleared us all away from the hanging over the chains. But they were okay. We then got to Southampton.
Now, was there a customs check? I mean, how strict was it? Or did you not much aware of it?
No, there was no one looked or checked anything like we. We went in a big transit shed.
Was there any sort of reception from families or the locals?
No. Just off you come. We went into a big reception shed, and they just marked your kit bag and your small pack, your big pack, like, you know, just turn around and a bit of chalk over it. And everybody, we got a train from Southampton up to London. Made our way across London, and I said, what's the best way to get to Woolwich? So I said, on a bus. And there was a load of us. It was on a Sunday. Don't know what that is. Right back in London, and got to make our way back to Woolwich. Quite a few of us in the draft, officers, no one from Woolwich, to my recollection, met us, and the officer was asking what way we get to. Anyone living in? Getting back to Woolwich, and the officers asked if there's anyone from London. They were officers off of the ship, didn't know their way around, and I said, yeah, I know the way to Woolwich, you could get a bus. And I don't think they took very kindly for that. Probably a couple of hundred soldiers on the bus. So we then made our way to London Bridge and got a train from London Bridge to Woolwich.
That's the Royal Artillery Base depot.
To the artillery barracks at Woolwich. And we marched up from the station and left all our kit. It was going to be brought up by army lorries. So when we got there, it was a Sunday, around about lunchtime. And the guys who I was friendly with, they said, you could go home from here, couldn't you? So I said, yes. So they said, well, how much money you got? So I had about £1, I suppose. So they said, well, how much is your fare? So I said, threepence, that's all. So they said, give us all your money and you get your fare back up your parents and we can go out and have a beer. I suppose a beer was about a shilling in them days. So I gave them all my money and off I went, like, down to the Woolwich Ferry, got on the 669 trolley bus, sat down. No one on the bus, hardly. It's more or less came through an industrial area at that time, Woolwich and Silvertown. Said to the conductress, Thrupney, please. And I got halfway home and she said, here, how far are you going for threepence? So I said, to Canning Town. She said, well, I want another threepence. I said, I've got no money, love. I said, I've just come home from Korea. I've been away for 18 months. Yeah, I've heard all that before. She said, come on, off you get. And chucked me off the bus. I said to her, honest, I said, I've just come home. So she said, yeah, I've heard it all before. Off you get and walk home. And I had to walk home like about a mile and a quarter to get home. And when I got indoors, everybody's made a fuss of me. All the neighbours are coming in. And what was ironic, it was just about the time of Queen Elizabeth's coronation. And all the houses decorated up. And my mum said, we've decorated the house up to give for your homecoming. And it wasn't a thing, like, you know. And then, of course, I said, let me put a shirt and a suit on. One of my brother's suits. Oh, no, no, no. You've got to come up the pub and let everyone see your home, like, with your uniform, my dad and that. And next thing I know, like, my wife, she'd come round because...
She weren't married then?
No, she was my girlfriend. She come round and, of course, like, you know, I'd be showing off to all the neighbours and oh, look, he's got medals as well. My father, like, you know, said, God, my son's got medals, like, you know. And anyhow, I went back to Woolwich that night. I've never ever dreamt of, like, letting my girlfriend, like, travel all the way home. It was quite safe in them days in London, but she insisted, no, I'm coming home over there with you, like, you know, I ain't seen you for a long while. So we went back to the barracks, and I think it was on the Monday, I got pulled out of the draft. They was all messing about with different things, people getting documentation. And I was told I had to go right up to the back of Woolwich Barracks. And when I went in there, a room, there was three or four officers sitting at a table. So I said, what have I done? What's going on? Like, why should I be singled out like this? So he said to me, one of them, it's to interview you with regards to a medical discharge. So I said, can I still go out Thursday? He said, oh no, you might be in a bit longer. I said, well, I don't want a medical discharge. I want a straightforward discharge, get out. I just want to go home. I want to go home Thursday. So he said, you realise it means if you have a medical discharge? So I said, yeah, I'm going to be in here longer than Thursday. I said, that's my concern. I don't want to know about nothing else. I just want to go home Thursday.
You weren't bothered about it because he meant the pension.
Yeah, I didn't know.
You didn't
realise? No. And I wasn't a bit concerned. Like, all I wanted was to go home Thursday. Anyhow, I had no squared off kit, blanko kit, brass is shiny or nothing like that, and they saw my on on a Tuesday, and they went absolutely potty, these NCOs at Woolwich, like, because of me kit not being up to standard to get out. So people were lending me all their kit. I had to take mine back at 8 o'clock at night, I think it was, and people were lending me all their kit, and I went on there like a tin soldier, like a guardsman, with it all squared off, and they see it, and they said, that's good. But when they saw me walk out on the Thursday morning with all this kit on, they went absolutely potty. And I had to go then to Bloomsbury in London, to the TA Centre. I had to report there before I went home, and I went there, and they told me that they would send me dates and all that of when I had to go, what evening.
Whereabouts in Bloomsbury was the TA? Whose TA Centre was it?
This was artillery. This was, what do you call it? Self-propelled guns, they had, like, 25 pounders mounted on the tank.
Well, we'll perhaps come back then briefly, because so you reported to them, and they said they'd get right. So what about your actual demo? When did that happen? Was that on the
That was there on the Thursday, I think it was either the 6th or 7th of June.
Now,
1953.
What was the procedure of DMOB? I mean, was there a big palaver about it, or was it pretty quick?
No, just went in. We went on the parade ground, the main parade ground at Woolwich Barracks. Marched up and down, and someone reviewed the columns of us. I don't think they made them. A speech or anything like that. I can remember we marched by, and whoever it was took the salute on a little dice-like platform, and that was it. We marched off, and that was the end of it, like, you know.
Did you get a demob suit of any kind?
No.
Now, what were you going to do? You know, you're a free man again, but firstly, what state did you back in? What? Had you made a full recovery, do you think?
Not really.
So what was still wrong with you?
I used to get a lot of backache, and I went and saw my own GP, and he said, we'll fight and get you, see if we can get you a pension. I said, oh, that's a lot of palaver. I said, like, you know, I'm working, I'm okay. And I said, no, I'm one of the sort, right, you know, I didn't want any hassle or nothing like that. I just wanted a quiet life. And my father said I was stupid. I said, well, I don't want charity from no one, and I just wouldn't accept it. But then I was working at Tate and Lyle's.
Now, how had you got your old job back? Was it just a matter
of... No, it wasn't my old job. I applied for another job there.
So what job had you got?
Unloading sugar barges, like, with 208 bags of sugar.
Was that what you wanted? Is that what you want with a bad back? Or did you think that might fix it?
Yeah, well, I thought, you know, I was going to be all right. I never looked on the dull side of anything, like, you know. But then I started getting... I've got the flu. I was convinced I'd got the flu. And I used to come home from work, and my mum used to have some powders, I don't know, Beecham's powders or whatever they were called in them days, it was like a white powder in an envelope. And I used to keep taking these things, you know, and was always felt, shivery, cold, felt terrible. And so my father said to me, on a Sunday, you've had this flu for a long while. He said, you've got something more than the flu. I've got an idea what you've got. He said, we'll go to the hospital. I said, no, I don't want to go to no hospital. So he said, you're always shaking. We're going to the hospital. So I went to Poplar Hospital, and they done a lot of tests on me, and they said, there's only one thing to do. We've got to do a blood test. We're going to do that, and we want you to come back tomorrow, and we're convinced that you've got malaria.